Compass Media Networks. This is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Another Trump challenger. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Wednesday, May 24th. Glad you could be with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is expected to announce his presidential bid this evening. Meanwhile, hear the reasons more candidates are getting in.
Authorities say a man crashed a U-Haul truck into the barrier near the White House because he wanted to seize power from the government.
Still no agreement to raise the nation's borrowing limit, but House Speaker Kevin McCarthy feels negotiators can beat a June 1st deadline.
And with inflation pushing wedding costs ever higher for guests, a look at how to politely decline an invite.
You know, it is okay to decline, and maybe what you could do, one suggestion was to throw the, you know, your friend and the couple, whether that's the bride or the groom, throw them like a celebratory lunch or brunch to give your support, but you don't, you know, you don't necessarily have to go to all the events.
Jessica Dickler at CNBC on what wedding guests are spending these days and how to be supportive when money is tight. Authorities say a man from the St. Louis suburbs deliberately crashed his rented U-Haul truck into a security barrier near the White House Monday night because he wanted to seize power from the government. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Court documents say 19-year-old Cy Kandula from Chesterfield, Missouri, flew to Washington on a one-way ticket, rented a truck from Herndon, Virginia, and drove straight to the White House, where he crashed the truck into a barrier near the north side of Lafayette Square and began waving around a Nazi flag. Secret Service agents say the suspect told them he wanted to get to the White House, seize power, and be put in charge of the nation, adding that he would kill the president if that's what he had to do. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. Kandula was quickly arrested by a U.S. Park police officer who rushed to the scene of the crash and saw him take out the flag. Authorities say it was the culmination of a six-month plan. The negotiating teams representing the White House and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy in debt ceiling talks have met again, but still have not reached agreement on how to raise the government's borrowing limit. Mr. McCarthy yesterday afternoon said negotiators could still finish by June 1.
We're not there yet. So, I mean, it's difficult because you've got to be able to, you take a couple days to write the bill. You got 72 hours here, then you got the Senate to act. I mean, this is why all the way back in February, we wanted to have an agreement.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
Republicans saying the White House is not showing any urgency is a ridiculous question, is a ridiculous statement for them to be making.
Negotiators on Capitol Hill seem to be narrowing their focus to a smaller group of key issues that were ripe for compromise, like reforms to energy permitting, new work requirements for some forms of federal aid, and the redistribution of unused COVID emergency funds. We are coming to you live from the Ashley Furniture Studio. Ashley, America's number one furniture and mattress store. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is expected to announce his presidential bid this evening during a Twitter chat with Elon Musk. Meanwhile, the 2024 Republican presidential nomination race is expected to crack the half-dozen mark for higher-profile entrants this week, and several more are considering bids, a sign that prospective candidates don't think Donald Trump has the contest locked up and view Governor DeSantis as a flawed lead challenger to the former president. Here's John McCormick, national politics reporter at The Wall Street Journal. John, what do we have?
Yeah, well, I think one of the big questions is this GOP presidential field for 2024, is it going to be closer to a half dozen or a dozen? And, you know, when you buy a package of eggs, whether you buy 6 or 12, it probably doesn't matter a whole much. But in this presidential race, the difference between a half dozen and a dozen could make a huge difference in terms of, you know, who gets to participate on the main debate stage when we have the first debate in August. You know, how fundraising is affected. If more candidates, there's just less money to be had because they're all fighting for the same dollars. And the ultimate outcome of the race will also be influenced by how big the field is. We saw in 2016 that Donald Trump very much benefited from a huge field. Back then we had 17 candidates. There's no reason to believe that we're going to be anywhere close to that this cycle.
Okay.
But, you know, we may get close to 12.
More people in the field, though, indicate what? That they see a path to victory and that the candidates that seem to be the leaders can be overtaken?
I think there's multiple things here. I mean, I think there is a perception that Donald Trump is beatable in this primary, that, you know, he has his hardcore, you know, base of support, maybe around 30% of the GOP electorate, but that leaves 70% open for others. And then I think there's also a sense that Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who looked, you know, incredibly, you know, powerful last fall after his big election victory in re-election victory in Florida, you know, has shown some flaws, you know, as he's amped up to get into this race, which we expect to happen later this week. And of course, on Monday, we saw Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina get in the race. So we're going to add two candidates by the end of this week. And I think one other really important variable here is that Republicans are looking at President Biden's weak polling, and they see that as an enticement to get in the race. If the president's polling was stronger, you know, maybe fewer candidates would be interested in jumping in.
Touch on it a little more since you referenced it earlier. What does it mean for fundraising when candidates start to trickle in?
Well, online fundraising has become so much more important in presidential races. So, you know, those small dollar donors, they get tired if too many people are emailing them. And so there's a competition there for those, you know, grassroots donors who are willing to chip in $10, $20 a month. And of course, when you get, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of people to do that, that adds up to be a lot of money. And then the major donors as well are looking at this race. The really big donors will mostly play with the super PACs, the committees that can raise and spend unlimited sums of money. But they're going to have to sort of decide, okay, do I want to back DeSantis or do I want to back Tim Scott or Nikki Haley? Or am I going to stick with former President Donald Trump? And so there's just that competition for oxygen and dollars in this presidential race, the more people that get into it.
We're speaking with John McCormick, national political reporter at The Wall Street Journal. His piece is called Questions About Trump, DeSantis, and Biden, Fuel Growth of 2024 GOP Field. As you put out in the story, I guess the super PACs, at least for a while, can prop up those candidates who aren't at the top of the polls, right?
Yeah, we've seen that in past election cycles that the super PACs can, you know, really if you just have one major donor who's willing to drop, you know, $5, $10, $15 million into your super PAC, that can you can't use that money for, you know, pure campaign activities. The two have to be separated, but that super PAC can advertise on television. It can do grassroots organizing to turn out voters. And so yeah, the sort of emergence of super PACs has really allowed candidates who are not polling as well to linger in these races longer. We saw in 2016, there were still six candidates in the race by the time it got to the South Carolina primary, which was the third contest that year after Iowa and New Hampshire. And Trump only got 32% of the vote in South Carolina because of that large field, but that was enough for him to win the South Carolina primary and get added momentum.
Thanks, John. John McCormick, national politics reporter at The Wall Street Journal.
Pure opportunity. It's what Michigan is all about. The opportunity to do more. The opportunity for all businesses to reach their full potential. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to discover all the ways the MEDC is helping Michigan thrive.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday. The South Carolina Senate has approved a bill that would ban most abortions after around 6 weeks of pregnancy, before most people know they're pregnant. Governor Henry McMaster has promised to sign it. Three Republican women were open to a 12-week proposal, but still maintained it did not give women enough time to make a decision, and they criticized changes like one requiring child support beginning at conception. One of those three was Senator Katrina Sheely.
It was a disappointment because I think I made an impassioned plea, and we got we got 21 votes on that amendment, which was really good. If I could have just switched two more, and I did ask, I went around and asked, but we just couldn't get enough votes to get the 12 weeks.
The bill approved includes exceptions for fatal fetal anomalies, the mother's life and health, and rape or incest up to 12 weeks. Doctors could face felony charges carrying 2 years imprisonment and a $10,000 fine. The South Carolina House initially wanted to ban abortion almost entirely at conception. It's 19 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
A group of House Republicans are raising questions about whether the Treasury Department's June 1st deadline to avoid a potential U.S. debt default is accurate. House Majority Leader Steve Scalise says he'd like to see more transparency on how they came to that date. But House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has not questioned the timeline as debt ceiling talks continue.
Where would we be if we just kicked the can down the road? It'd be worse off. And we're working together now. We're finally meeting. So
McCarthy says the circle of issues is becoming smaller, smaller, smaller.
Number two.
Russian President Vladimir Putin told an awards ceremony audience Russia is going through difficult times as its invasion of Ukraine continues, but that national pride is growing. Meanwhile, the U.S. Embassy in Moscow slammed a Russian court's decision to extend the pretrial detention of Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich by 3 months, State Department spokesman Matthew Miller.
The claims against Evan are baseless, and we continue to call for his immediate release as well as for the immediate release of Paul Whelan.
And the embassy also called for regular consular access to Gershkovich, adding that so far there have been two attempts that were denied.
Number three.
Elon Musk says he will interview Florida Governor Ron DeSantis this evening on Twitter, promising a major announcement. DeSantis is expected to announce his 2024 presidential bid in the Twitter chat. The Republican is also expected to file paperwork with the Federal Election Commission today to make his bid official. The 170,000 residents of U.S. territory Guam in the West Pacific are bracing for a hit from Super Typhoon Mawar, which is now a Category 4 storm with winds of 155 miles per hour. Meteorologists say the typhoon could be the strongest in decades to impact Guam, bringing life-threatening flooding and the potential for damaging winds over the next few days. President Biden yesterday approved an emergency declaration for the territory. If you're using someone else's Netflix password, time is up. As expected, Netflix is cracking down on customers who share their accounts. To share the streaming giant's content with non-household people, current customers can either transfer a profile to a new membership that someone else pays for, or they can buy an extra membership for another $8 a month.
All right, here it is. We've been waiting for this crackdown. It has arrived. Thank you, Jen.
If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2023.
Thanks for being with us. Getting married is a major commitment, as you know. Going to the wedding as a guest is its own financial obligation. Tips on managing money for both from Jessica Dickler, personal finance reporter at CNBC. Jessica, help us out.
Yeah, well, I don't know about you, but I got a few invitations for weddings this summer. There's still sort of that backlog from the pandemic, and more couples want to go all out, and that means that guests have to spend a little bit more. There was a recent report that found that guests are spending over $600 between the travel, the clothing that they need, the prep, the gifts. Most guests spend about $180 on average on a wedding gift, so it really does add up.
Goodness. Okay, so we've got inflation connected to all this, right? Are we seeing anything, say, on the wedding party side, or the bride and groom, for that matter, trying to dial things back?
Well, I mean, it really varies so much, and I do think that there's more of a range of how couples want to do it, but a lot of couples want to have big, big weddings. They're inviting tons of people, and they're having destination bachelor and bachelorette parties, and, you know, all that costs a lot for the guest.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess as a guest, what are we to spend these days? How much is appropriate, and how is it dictated?
Yeah, well, this was interesting to me because I always thought that there was sort of like an unwritten rule that you should spend according to, you know, maybe the cost per plate of the wedding you're attending or what type of wedding it is. But the experts that I talked to said that there really is no rule of thumb for that you should spend, you know, maybe more if you're closer to the couple. It's more about your relationship to the couple getting married and also your own financial, you know, boundaries. So you know, definitely don't spend more than you can afford. I know a lot of people feel pressure to, you know, give a nice gift and show up for all the events, but you should really just do what feels right to you and your budget.
We're speaking with Jessica Dickler, personal finance reporter at CNBC. Her story is called "Here's How Much Wedding Guests Are Spending as Inflation and Interest Rates Are Taking a Toll." What about just kind of politely declining?
That occurred to me too. And one piece of advice that I heard that I really liked is that, you know, it is okay to decline. And maybe what you could do, one suggestion was to throw the, you know, your friend and the couple, whether that's the bride or the groom, throw them like a celebratory lunch or brunch to give your support. But you don't, you know, you don't necessarily have to go to all the events.
Okay. I know you got tips for wedding guests who are on a budget. What do some of them sound like?
Yes. Well, a lot of times you'll get a save the date, you know, even a year in advance. So really start to plan and budget as early as you can. That's sort of key for any major, you know, expenditure. So start a savings fund on the side. And also if, you know, if you are going to be traveling for the wedding or the bachelor and bachelorette parties, start tracking prices. That's huge these days as we've seen airfares sort of soar. And if you're traveling with a group, you know, maybe you're the one that spearheads the responsibility of monitoring the price changes so you can make sure that you get the best deal.
Is it true too that we kind of say we're planning to spend one thing and then spend a lot more?
Well, I think that happens. That can happen with pretty much anything, at least in my experience, right? But, you know, with financial goals, it's important to kind of stick to the budget. That's the only way that you will, you know, keep your finances in check.
All right. Thanks, Jessica. Jessica Dickler, personal finance reporter at CNBC. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
The Dell Technologies Summer Sale event starts now with limited quantity deals on select performance PCs with Windows 11 Pro. Save on select Vostro laptops with built-in security features and select Latitude laptops with enhanced privacy, collaboration, and connectivity. Save on essential accessories, plus get free shipping. Dell Technologies recommends Windows 11 Pro for business. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Advancing the conversation, identifying trends, and informing the world. This is America's First News, This Morning, with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Wednesday, May 24. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Still no debt ceiling agreement. DeSantis to announce his presidential bid tonight. Investigators say a Missouri man who crashed a truck near the White House wanted to seize the government. Lawmakers in South Carolina approved a 6-week abortion ban with exceptions. The U.S. Surgeon General says social media is a threat to the mental health of teenagers. The El Popo volcano in central Mexico is spewing greater amounts of ash lately. And how social media showered love and money on a Detroit traffic cop. That story in about 20 minutes. This portion of the program is brought to you by Aura. Online crime is a huge problem. It affects everyone, and that's why you should partner with Aura. Sign up for a free 2-week trial today at aura.com/Robert. The brewing side and the marketing side of the Budweiser empire collided in spectacular fashion back in March when Bud Light's marketers arranged for a personalized can of Bud Light to be sent to a transgender social media star. The promotion and its aftermath made the brewer an object lesson in how not to handle a culture war storm. Here's Jennifer Maloney, business reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Jennifer, review how it started.
Earlier this year, Bud Light launched a new marketing campaign, and the goal was to appeal to a broader audience, particularly younger adults and more women. Bud Light had appointed a woman to this role of overseeing marketing for Bud Light. And she had devised this new campaign. They rolled out some new Super Bowl ads earlier this year that you might have seen. So this was working, actually. And the sales volume for Bud Light was, the declines were slowing. So things were starting to move in a good direction. But then the brand sent a single personalized can to a transgender influencer, and a backlash erupted.
Okay. So this was not a television campaign. There was not beer for sale with the transgender person's face on it. But still, the backlash was swift, and it was impactful, right?
It was. Sales of Bud Light started following the first week of April, when this post was put up on Instagram with an image of the can. And the sales continued to fall for more than a month, even into the second week of May, which is the most recent sales data we have. By that point, Bud Light sales volume was down more than 28% compared to the same period a year earlier. So this is a rare example of a politically motivated boycott really having a big impact.
And there was a delayed response, which hurt things too, as you pointed out.
Yes. So there were a number of elements of the company's response that seemed to make things worse and really made everyone angry. You know, supporters and opponents of transgender rights were angry. Core Bud Light drinkers were angry. Retailers, wholesalers, bar owners, even company employees ended up angry. So it's really been kind of a perfect storm for the company. The company initially, for the first couple of weeks, didn't put out much of a response at all. They were hoping that it would blow over, as these things often do. But in this case, they didn't. And one of the things that sort of fueled the flames was that Alyssa Heinerscheid, the woman who was in charge of marketing for Bud Light, she had done an earlier podcast interview, like before this transgender influencer put up a post. She had done an interview describing her efforts to broaden the appeal of the brand, make it more inclusive and bring in more women and younger adults. She sort of used an unfortunate turn of phrase, and she said that previous Bud Light campaigns had been fratty and sort of out of touch humor. And people who were upset about the Transgender Influencers Association with the brand sort of seized on these comments that Heinerscheid had made. And then there was this new backlash that was really focused on her personally. So employees at the company became upset because they felt like the company wasn't coming out in her defense.
Okay, yeah.
As she came under sort of personal attack.
We're speaking with Jennifer Maloney, business reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her story is called How Bud Light Blew It. So what now in terms of repairing the image?
Well, Bud Light is leaning back into very broad themes of country music and football. The brand is going to be tripling its planned marketing spending this summer. It has also tried to make amends with the wholesalers whose employees bore a lot of the brunt of the backlash. You know, angry people in streets and in stores and bomb threats and the like. So they've given a $500 bonus to a lot of those frontline employees. And the company says that they're going to continue to support LGBT organizations that it has decades-long relationships with. But the CEO told me that he sees a distinction between corporate sponsorships like that and brand marketing, which he thinks should stick to sort of more generic themes that everyone can agree on, like music and sports.
Jennifer Maloney, business reporter at the Wall Street Journal. By the way, on a related note, Target is pulling some Pride Collection products from its stores after facing customer backlash. Target has been offering things like gender-fluid mugs, queer all-year calendars, and books for toddlers with titles like Bye Bye Binary.
Today's Mic Drop is brought to you by Dell. For your small business needs, call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday. It is time now for the Mic Drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we often hear about and run into people who are more entitled these days, and that apparently goes for the criminals as well. This is after a woman took to Reddit to tell the story of the upset hacker who stole her credit card information. She says a criminal stole her info and trying to book an airline flight through a travel agency, but made the mistake of signing up to the service using her email address. Once she saw the unauthorized booking, she immediately called her bank to cancel it. 2 days later, she says she received an entitled email from the hacker who booked the flight. It read, "Why was my flight canceled? Could you please respond? I have a family event to attend. Thank you for your time. Travis." The novice hacker not only gave his name but his email to the woman, also included his picture and phone number in the signature, almost like he was asking to get caught. The woman reported him to police, and users had jokes, mostly asking how she could be so heartless toward the hacker since he had a family event to attend.
What in the world happened here? This is crazy.
I don't know. It's almost like he wanted to get caught, or maybe, you know, Travis, maybe he just created an entire new profile, wanted to see, you know, how quickly he could get caught. Because I mean, it's almost impossible for someone to be that dumb, right?
Right. Or this is just one of those let's play on somebody's heartstrings.
I mean, possibly.
Maybe
they wouldn't find out. I don't know. Doesn't seem like he cared too much about the repercussions.
Okay, Travis.
Yeah, Travis. Good luck. And we've talked about how expensive it's been for Taylor Swift fans to attend her stadium shows this spring, so maybe you can't fault someone for trying to capitalize on the mania, even if it doesn't work out. You may have seen the video or images of Swift performing in a driving rainstorm at Gillette Stadium in Massachusetts over the weekend. Soon after, someone claiming to have attended the show posted a listing on Facebook Marketplace attempting to sell jars of rainwater from the show for just $250. The listing has since been taken down, so we don't know if anyone splurged for a jar of the H2O, and most commenters rightly called the listing a scam. Others had jokes, or at least we think they were jokes. One called $250 a fair price, while another called the liquid holy water. Another wanted more information in order to make their decision, like whether the water was secured from floor seats or way up in the balcony.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you got to have all the info before you can make an informed decision.
Big purchase here.
Yeah.
I got a beef with Taylor Swift, by the way.
Uh-oh.
She has scheduled a concert for tomorrow evening.
Yes.
In the Philadelphia area.
Right.
I have soccer practice with one of my girls' teams.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
You're missing half the team?
And my goalie is missing practice tomorrow because of the T-Swift concert.
Oh, boy.
I would ask if she not schedule those concerts on days ahead of a big tournament weekend.
Right.
Can we do that, Taylor,
can
please?
Can we get some Gordon Deal consultation here, T-Swift?
I need my bodies.
The least she can do.
I need the players at practice. Thanks, Mike.
Ashley's Memorial Day sale is going on now. Get ready for summer with the biggest and best furniture deals. Be one of the first to take advantage of a selection of must-have items now under $500. And get up to 50% off spotlight deals. Whether you're redecorating indoors or rethinking your outdoor space, save big on this season's trending styles that will make your home the perfect setting for summer get-togethers. Visit your local Ashley store or ashley.com to shop and save today. Only at Ashley.
Thanks for being with us. Graduation day is here, and for many teenagers, the ultimate gift is a new set of wheels. With only 3 new vehicles priced under $20,000 these days, cheap rides are a thing of the past. But Consumer Reports has teamed up with the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety to pick the best and safest new models for teens. The list includes, among others, the Mazda 3, Subaru Legacy, Honda HR-V, the Toyota RAV4, and the Honda Odyssey minivan. On the pricier side, the Subaru Ascent, the Hyundai Palisade, and the Lexus NX. It is 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the 3 big things you need to know. Number one.
Debt ceiling negotiations are locked on a classic problem that has divided and disrupted Washington before. Republicans want to roll back federal government spending. President Biden and other Democrats do not. Negotiations on raising the debt ceiling are expected to reconvene today. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
If everyone is working in good faith recognizes that no one is going to get, either side is going to get exactly what they want, we'll get it done.
Failure to raise the nation's debt ceiling would risk a potentially chaotic federal default.
Number two.
According to court documents, the 19-year-old Missouri man accused of deliberately driving a rented truck into a White House barrier Monday night told authorities he admires Nazis and wanted to seize power and kill the president. When Secret Service agents asked Cy Kandula about a flag with a swastika he removed from his backpack, he said he'd bought it because Nazis have a great history.
Number three.
An Illinois investigation has found 451 Catholic clergy sexually abused nearly 2,000 children in the state over a nearly 70-year period. which was more than four times the number the church named when the state began its review in 2018. Attorney General Kwame Raoul.
Our investigation led to the disclosure of 348 more clerics than prior to our investigation.
Raoul acknowledged the statute of limitations has expired in many cases, and the abusers will never see justice in a legal sense. The U.S. Surgeon General is warning of the potential risks of social media to young people and urged policymakers and tech companies to strengthen standards for adolescents. Vivek Murthy on ABC.
The entire burden of managing social media is falling on the shoulder of parents and kids, and that is simply not right. We've got to have their backs. We've got to support them. And that's why I'm issuing this advisory, is to call our country not only to attention about the potential harms with social media, but also to call our country to action.
Murthy notes that there are benefits to social media, such as its use as an outlet for creativity and for finding community. But adverse effects include online harassment, increased exposure to content related to self-harm and racism, and negative impacts on sleep, body image, and physical activity.
That is a heavy load to bear for some. Thank you, Jen.
What does the future of mobility in Michigan sound like? It's the sound of new EV charging stations at our state parks. Discover all the ways MEDC is driving next-gen mobility in Michigan at michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for being with us for no other reason other than she was a working mom with a great personality and an important job, making sure people drive safely through Detroit. Social media is showering a traffic control officer with love and money. GoodNewsNetwork.org says it started when TikTok account MD Motivators interviewed Lanita Edge on duty in the middle of the road, gabbing as she does with passersby and wishing people a happy Mother's Day.
What's your name?
My name is Edge.
How long have you been doing this job for?
About 6-7 years now.
You love it, I can tell.
I do. For the people, honestly, for the people.
She said she explained she was born and raised in the Motor City, was a Tigers fan. In that video, she was surprised when the TikToker Zachary invited her to the Tigers game for Mother's Day. The working mom recently lost her husband and asked if she had to pay, at which point Zachary surprised her with $500. Meanwhile, Zachary had secretly set up a crowdfunding campaign that amassed $50,000, a gift delivered at the Tigers game. For Jennifer Koshenka and Mike Gavin, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.